Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Men's Spiritual Radio Hour with Mike Snyder and Mark Rawson here on Spiritual Connections Radio.
And I'd like to welcome you all to the Men's Spiritual Radio Show, also known as the Men's Spiritual Hour. We're really excited to have our new music in from our friend Mike, our co-host. Hello, Mike.
Hey, Mark.
Thank you for that great music. I'm glad we have our new intro for the show. As everybody knows, we had a license to use some music from Colette Bell Reid last year that we really enjoyed, and you know, when the year came to an end, we basically wanted to kind of change it up and go to some new music. And if people are familiar or not familiar, Mike is generally he's always on with hosting the show here at the Men's Spiritual Radio Show, but he also does another show with our friend Brigida, where he actually plays music during the show, and he's known for his great channeling ability to actually channel music, and does that during the events at the Lightbridge Center out towards Pennsylvania. So it's really exciting to have him design the new music for our show. As it goes back a few years ago, me and Mike came together. I've known him longer than that, but we came together to actually create this show because we felt it was necessary and much needed to have a radio show that supports men in their spiritual journeys and really kind of gives them a safe space to learn about different men and different spiritual practices and everything around the world. So we're really excited to continue this show, and I'm always have a lot of gratitude for having Mike on as my host and co-host and all that great thing. So, as always, thank you, Mike, for everything you do and being part of this. Excellent. So I just want to let everybody know, if you want to find out more about this show and other shows, you can go to our website, which is www.spiritualconnectionsradio.com. And we basically have the Men's Spiritual Radio Hour on. It normally is on the third Tuesday, but we have, you know, every once in a while we end up having to shift some of our Tuesday shows around. So your best bet is to go check out the website and see, you know, where things stand and you know, how the shows are lining up. So with that, I'll go ahead, Mike, and bring you in. Go ahead.
Okay. Thank you, Mark. So I'm going to introduce our guest for tonight. And tonight, our guest, his name is Dharma. He's the author of the book, The Power and Intelligence of Karma and Reincarnation. Originally from India, Dharma currently resides in Chicago. He enjoys reading, religion, and faith, engaging in discussing such topics. Dharma has his degree in commerce and works at a bank. And when he was young, he rebelled against the established religions and the thought of a God who would torture people in hell, and it turned him away from religion. And a few years ago, he had an epiphany about God, karma, and reincarnation that was the inspiration for his book. He has always questioned everything and hopes to make people question what they've always believed in with this book. And with his new book, he hopes to inspire people to reach for the hand of God, but not in the way most people might think. And that just sounds really, really interesting, and it's what we're very happy to have you on today, Dharma. How are you doing?
Okay, I'm fine. Thank you for having me, guys.
Yeah, welcome to the show. It's you know, me and Mike were kind of talking to Dharma before the show got started, and there was just so many different topics we wanted to talk about. We're like, hey, we better save some of this for the show. So why don't we go ahead and get started? Dharma, you know, talk to me about the beginning as you as a child and what your upbringing as far as a religious structure looked like, and then how it continued to unfold from that point.
Well, as you know, well, I'm Hindu, born in a Hindu family, and my teacher, first teacher for all of us, was a female, my mother. She was a very devout Hindu, but she had a very open mind. And she, as you know, as teenagers, we all rebel, we all question religion, and I question religion also. And the thought of a hell where people get tortured was a problem for me, because as we know, some people are born on the wrong side of the tracks. We know that, and you know, if you grow up in a place where there's poverty and there's crime all over, you might not turn out to be such a good person. So to think that there's some place where you get tortured was a problem for me. And also, we keep confusing revenge or vengeance for justice. These two are quite different. Movies have popularized this view that somehow the hero, he gets his family killed or something, and then he kills the villain at the end, and somehow justice is done. No, that's not justice. That's vengeance. If someone runs over my lawn or my postbox, and do I take my car and run over his lawn and postbox? That's not justice. That's vengeance. And to me, what is justice? Justice is when the person who ran over my postbox apologizes to me and pays me for the damages. That's justice. And to me, hell is not justice. Imagine that. In God's home, there is no justice.
Mm.
So that's a horrible thing. That, I mean, these are ideas that have been coming on. I mean, you have to understand that religions were born thousands of years ago. Times were different. People were different. And that they came up with ideas that fit their view of the world at that time. Justice obviously was not there. Vengeance was the rule of the day. You kill my people, I'll go kill yours. So, and that's the way they fashioned heaven and hell. Hell became this place where they called it justice. But now we know that it's vengeance. It's not justice. And that's when the revelation of reincarnation, karma and reincarnation, came to me, is that in true Hinduism, heaven and hell do not belong. You die, you are reborn. That's it. And so reincarnation gives you a chance to make amends. So the person who ran over the your mailbox gets a chance to repay the debt that he owed in the previous life. So that's true justice, and that was the revelation for me.
Mm. Yeah, you kind of answered my question already, and that is, it seems to me that as far as the little that I know about the Hindu religion, there is no teachings of heaven and hell.
I'm sorry, there's no teaching?
There is no teaching in Hindu religion that talks about heaven and hell.
Well, there are people who do believe in heaven and hell, but they say we only go there for a certain period of time, for a limited period of time. And I think the problem or the great advantage of Hinduism is that it takes ideas from other religions and incorporates itself into itself. So, and I think these ideas of heaven and hell came from outside and got incorporated into Hinduism, but we already had karma and reincarnation, so how do you fit them in? Unfortunately, what they did was, well, we only go there for a limited period of time, and that didn't make any sense either. What do you mean limited period? How is that? What's a limited period? So they don't belong. Hell does not belong because it makes God a torturer. We all make mistakes in life, and I don't understand what would we gain by somebody being tortured. I mean, if somebody does me harm, how do I benefit from knowing that this person is being tortured somewhere? I'm not benefiting from it. That's vengeance. That's not justice. So to me, it just didn't make any sense for hell. And no hell, then it means no heaven either. You can't have that one either. So.
Mm. Yeah, there seems to be that you and I had the similar beliefs as young children. You know, I was brought up with a very strong Christian background. And, you know, from that, you know, with my grandparents and everything being ministers, you know, was brought up a very strong, you know, dogma-based belief systems. But I think you and I are in the same belief, and that is when we were children, we knew what God was to us. And no matter what we would read about all these other things, such as God hurting people or a hell or anything like that, didn't really fit with what we knew from our own heart, what the Creator, what God would be. So I think for a lot of people, they're of the same mindset. Go ahead, Mike.
Okay. Dharma, I'd just like to say I did get a chance to start to read a little bit of the beginning of your book today, and I was very fascinated. I actually only got through the foreword, which I think was maybe about 6 or 7 pages, but I really liked what I've read so far in the philosophy you talk about in how you can have people that are kind of more like doers in life, and you can have people that are kind of like takers in life, and the philosophy of how, you know, when you're focused on going out there and doing something in order to better society and give your time and everything, it creates good karma. And I found that very fascinating, because I think that people could really benefit from that message, that in the way you put it about them not always asking God for everything, and I need this from God, I need that, but in the process of them doing and giving, they kind of automatically receive what they need to without even thinking about it.
That's true.
So, and I like that, but I also like it in the balance of when you're out there giving and giving your all and doing it, that you also learn to, at times, to take moments for yourself when you need to rest or need to recharge. And so I was wondering if you could expound upon that, like, from your perspective and what you wrote, what do you see as a person that's a constant giver, but what do you recommend to them as far as being able to give to themselves too, so that they don't overtax themselves? You know what I'm saying?
Well, you know, it's not as if that you have to constantly give. I mean, the whole idea, the paradigm change that I talk about in my book is that the times back then, thousands of years ago, when most religions were formed, times were different. Times were very, very, very harsh. I mean, you couldn't imagine how harsh they were. People died in their 30s, right? And if you and I could go back to those times, we wouldn't survive. We simply would not be able to survive. Most jobs were manual jobs. Most people depended on farming. And if there were a drought or something, there was no government to come rushing to your aid. Most medicine was quack medicine, little law and order. It was not a good time to live, and that's why most people died early. You know, and the concept of God came from the time where you could go to heaven, enjoy, and be happy. And what I'm trying to do is, like, times have changed now. We are not as weak anymore. I mean, are we still weak? Do we still need to go someplace and be taken care of? One of the things that I say is that heaven is a metaphor for childhood. We all look back on our childhood days, and we all think, everybody says, you know, back good old days. And people laugh and say, ha, 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 those are not that good. But no, they were good old days, because we were kids then. And as kids, times were good for us. People took care of us. We had no worries. And I think the heaven is a metaphor for the childhood that we lost, that we yearned for, a place where we could go and be happy. And what I want to change the thinking is that, you know, it's time to become an adult. You know, instead of praying and hoping for a God to come and and solve the problems. This is, it's ours. The world's problems are ours to solve. And so we need to get involved. We need to, what I call is that if you're facing hard times, do you pray for relief or do you pray for strength? And that is what we should pray for. We should pray for strength. And that is what I write about in my book, is like, you know, you're stronger, we are stronger, and we should pray for strength and, you know, do our best to solve the problems of this earth.
Yeah, and what that makes me think of is, you know, how a lot of times this comes out a lot these days about living in the moment, you know, the power of now and living in the now. And, you know, it seems to really fit in with your material very, very well because, you know, we can desperately be living in the past, like you said, you know, remembering our childhood and everything and wishing things were the way they were. We can constantly have our minds in the future and always projecting, well, what's going to happen next? And, you know, if I don't know what's going to happen next, I don't know what to do. And we all definitely fall into those predicaments. But what I really like is when somebody is trying to understand the concept of living in the now, being happy in the now in whatever moment you're in, and then you fuse that with the concept of karma and reincarnation, it really is all about the now because, in essence, under the theories we're talking about, we're not just going to die and then go back to heaven for the next million years of eternity. We're constantly evolving. We're constantly, you know, as human beings and species and divine spirits that we're evolving and moving forward and learning. And, you know, it's our consciousness that goes with us. And so do you agree with my concepts?
Yes, I don't know if I'm the first one ever to ask a question like this. Is what do you do in heaven? Let's say if heaven does exist, what do you do?
Yeah.
I mean, what do you do all day? I mean, do you just sit around and watch TV? What exactly happens? And I'm telling you, I'm the first guy to ever ask this question. This shames us as human beings, as so much history and. And nobody ever asked this question. It's like, what do you actually do in heaven? And why would God do that? Keep people, millions of people, in useless existence, doing nothing. Why would God do that? It doesn't make any sense. And when we talk about reincarnation, life, as I said, life has been so harsh that we have always looked down upon it. We say, you know, we are sinners and somewhere up there we can go there and be happy. And I want to change the idea that life is a gift. We have been given a gift. God has given us a gift and we need to appreciate this gift. We need to thank God for giving us this gift, especially the human life where we can think and reason things out. And to me, heaven suspiciously sounds like what Hindus say about going back, I mean, being born in the lower life form. Because when you talk about, let's say, the Buddha, I heard a whole story about the Buddha that he was sitting with his followers and some guy came up and said, did you see my cows? I lost my cows. And the Buddha said, no, sir, we didn't see your cows. And the guy goes away and the Buddha says, how lucky we are that we don't have to worry about these cows that this guy is so worried about. And to me, I'm sure Buddhists won't like this, but it seems like, but that's part of human life. You worry about your parents, you worry about your kids. You worry about your marriage. I mean, you worry about your country. It's part of being human. And if you are saying, I don't want to have any worries, like people say, we go to heaven, we won't have any worries. Well, you are not going to be a human anymore. That's not life. That's not human life. A cow, on the other hand, has no worries. The food is right there. Food is right there. Water is right there. There are no worries for a cow. So would you trade your life for a cow? Basically, that's what, to me, heaven sounds like, that you are trading human life to go down a lower life form.
Mm. So, you know, first of all, before we go any further, can you tell people where they can purchase your book?
Sure. It's on Amazon.com and other places also, wherever ebooks are sold. And on Amazon, you can also buy, you know, hardcover copy also, and other places also. Yeah, all online. Yes.
And you know, for the people who aren't familiar with the book, you know, the idea about this book, which is really neat compared to, or I should say, very unique compared to a lot of spiritual books that are out there, is that this book really takes a look at topics such as God, karma, reincarnation, and other spiritual topics from a strong fact-based foundation, a really grounded one of looking at different explanations of the topic. So for a lot of people who, you know, don't care for the woo-woo stuff or are in the process of trying to find something beyond the dogma-based religions, this is a highly recommended book to kind of give you some answers to a lot of that. So thank you for bringing that to everybody. It's, it's such a gift to the planet.
Basically, when we think of God and all these religions are talking about, there is zero evidence. There is no evidence at all. I mean, even for reincarnation. Again, as I said, I'm a very rational person. I want to look at things straight in the eye and say, you know, there is no evidence. So if there is no evidence, could there be a rational explanation for heaven? As you said, as I said, it's a metaphor for childhood. And to me, when we see these terrorists, they are blowing themselves, they're killing themselves, and they hope to be rewarded some in heaven. And to me, it seems like they have given up on life. And what they're doing is that they hope that someplace else, the faraway mountain that looks so smooth, basically heaven is like, because life is so harsh, people hoped for a nice afterlife. And religions came up with the idea of a heaven where you can go and enjoy yourself. And reincarnation is the opposite. Basically, you die, you come back. Well, you're coming back to the same harsh life. That's not very appealing. But what reincarnation is saying, you cannot run away. There's no other place. This is it. This is all what you see is what you have, what you get. And life is all there is. If there is no life, you have death. That's all. There is no magic land to run away to. And that's what, to me, reincarnation is all about. I mean, it's for the strong. Reincarnation is not for the weak. It's for the strong.
Mm. Yeah, there's a cartoon that I've seen done a few times that comes to mind as you talk about your different topics here, and that is Jesus is sitting on a bench with a teenage man. And the man is turning to Jesus, and he's like, he goes, "I don't understand why you're not fixing all these problems on the planet, you know?" And Jesus is turning back to him, and he says, "It's funny, I was just thinking the same thing about you."
That's true. And that's what I also talk about in my book, is that there are two, I mean, most religions can be divided into two. One is the king religion, God is seen more as a king who will come down and fix things. And the other type is a teacher religions, which Buddhism obviously comes to mind as a teacher faith. And in a teacher faith, when you have a problem, you go to the king and say, "I have a problem, people are raiding my village, or, you know, we don't have water," or something like that. And the king will say, "Okay, I'll fix it." But in a teacher faith, you go to the teacher and say, you know, "People are raiding my village," and the teacher says, "Well, here's how you can defend yourself." And that is the difference between the two religions. To me, Hinduism and Buddhism are teacher faith. And you don't ask God to fix things. You say, "How can I fix things? Give me a, tell me how I should fix things in this world." Mm-hmm. So it's a totally different way of viewing God.
Mm. You know, we were kind of talking about this a little bit before the show got started, and that is, for a lot of people in the spiritual circles and different spiritual groups, there's a belief that, you know, for a group of people on the planet that we've moved from what's called the 3D or the other dimension into this new dimension, the fifth dimension. And with that, they believe that because of the work that a lot of different souls have done through lots of reincarnations, that mm-hmm. there is no such thing as karma anymore. And I was just wondering if you wanted to talk about karma.
Sure. Well, karma is a Sanskrit word. Basically, it means action or work, and that's it. It's not any a spiritual payback system or anything like that. And basically, Buddha talked about it. If you are a student and if you work hard, you get good grades, as simple as that. And if you don't study, you get bad grades. So it's not as if that there's some deity or something up there, running your life. Yeah, basically, why are some countries so successful and why are some countries not? In Japan, it seems that a woman can, in full, with all her jewelry and all that, she can walk in the dead of the night and nothing will happen to her. And, it's a culture. Countries are successful because they worked hard at it. They worked hard, they saved, they made sure that, people are helped, the unfortunate are helped, and that's how you get to be a successful country. So I don't believe in karma being some kind of a payback system or anything like that. I think it's just what it is. It's what the Sanskrit word says. It's just action. Action or work, and that's it. And so with reincarnation, you get to work, and you can see the opposite in heaven. There's no work to do. So when you choose reincarnation, you're choosing life. You're choosing to work.
Well, before I know Mike's got a question, but let me go ahead and hit you with one last one before we transition and we'll take a break. You talked earlier about how, you were brought up with the Hindu religion, very strong teachings from your mother. At a certain mm-hmm. point, a lot of the dogma-based stuff, even in the Hindu religion, didn't fit for you, so you kind of turned away from religion. So talk to us a little bit about what does that journey look like from the time you turned away from religion to where you are today? Like, what did you do, if anything, as far as your self-study? Or it seems to me that for every individual, no matter what their beliefs or whatever they do or don't do or turn away from or whatever, that there is a need or a feeling for our personal life for us to explore and to feel like we're growing through our life. And I'm just wondering, what does that growth look like for you with the fact that you turned away from religion at a very young age?
Yeah, at a very young age, and now I'm in my 50s. And I mean, it's something that just happened. I don't know what it was. I mean, I wish I could explain it. I mean, like I said, it hate to use the word revelation or anything like that, because here I am an atheist. And the one thing I should say about Hindu religion is that they have never taught that atheists are bad or atheism is bad. I mean, it's, as I said, in a teacher faith, all ideas are welcome. In a teacher faith, it's not what you believe, but what you do. And again, karma means action, work. So what you do matters. So you could be an atheist and still be a Hindu. There are people who call themselves atheist Hindus. So it really doesn't matter. So to me, even though I was an atheist, I was still not as if that I was kept away from Hinduism because of their ideas. And in the 50s, it just happened that just suddenly I changed. I guess it just, as I said, the revelation of hell, and I was thinking of reincarnation, and this just came to me that, hey, wait a second, hell doesn't belong. It came from outside. And as I said earlier about vengeance and justice, vengeance is always violent, whereas justice is almost always nonviolent. And reincarnation is justice, because I remember this young lady who stopped me. She was kicked out by her in-laws, and I was just walking on, and then she asked me for some help, and I gave her some help, but I wish I could have done more. I wish I could have put her in a cab, drove her over to her friend's house or something. Instead, I just gave her some money. And to me, that was my karma calling. That was maybe in my previous life, her father or somebody had helped me, and this was my chance to pay it back. And I flopped. I did it. And to me, that was the power of reincarnation, power of karma, is that you get to, instead of being tortured and brutalized, you get to pay back. That was the revelation for me. Yeah.
Okay. Let's just go to a quick break, and then we'll come back with questions from Mike. For everybody that's been tuning in, you're listening to the Men's Spiritual Radio Hour. We're on once a month, and you can find out more about us on our website at spiritualconnectionsradio.com. And with that, go ahead, Mike.
Okay, well, I just want to say that, these subjects are pretty fascinating because I had a lot of the same questions from a young age that you presented to for myself, you know, especially like, what do you do all day in heaven? And, you know, does a hell really make sense to me and things like that? And, you know, from a young age, I started to get into different teachings, a lot of them based on different findings from the Edgar Cayce readings and things like that. And the one thing that I've really found fascinating is that, especially through the Edgar Cayce teachings, they talk about reincarnation and karma and the fact that you really pick up where you left off. So, you know, you can have another life, another lifetime, and there's certain relationships you have, you know, that let's say you had certain things happen with the previous, you know, mother or father, and in this life they might not be your mother or father again, but maybe a sister, brother, or friend. But whatever issues you had, you pick up where you left off. So, you know, my common advice has been to people that are interested in this stuff, and I'd like to get your take on it, is that if at all possible, if you're able to try to keep most of your relationships either peaceful, or if they're very difficult relationships, try to keep them in a way that if you don't talk to the people much, or let's say you have to end the relationship, you try to do it in a peaceful way, or in a way that doesn't create so much tension, because, you know, if you leave things hanging, you know, it stays there hanging, and when you come back again, it's something you'll just deal with again. And, you know, sometimes, you know, I like your concepts, like you're saying, is, you know, if you wanted to finish the job and do something right and do it, you know, with integrity and go all the way through, you know, we might not realize how long that lasts. You know what I mean? Because if it's left unfinished, and I think even issues with ourselves too, if we leave so much things inside ourselves unfinished when we pass away, we definitely can re-experience those emotions and unfinished business in the next life.
Right.
So what are your thoughts?
Well, to me, as I said, this is a teacher faith, and when you think of a teacher faith, we are in class, basically. We are in class. Each life is a class to me, and each life is an opportunity to listen to God. God is teaching us, and so we grow as people. Every day we grow. One of the sayings, I'm mangling it a lot, I think, is you have to die in order to live, and that doesn't make any sense. But as we grow older, we lose people, and that's what, it's not we dying, but those near to us are dying, and we change. And things happen in our lives, and we change. We move forward, and in Buddhism, they say you have to take a look at your suffering. You have to look at your suffering. You have to dissect it and grow from it. And to me, that's what life is like. We are in a class, and you come back in the next life. And people say that in this life, if you do good, you're rewarded with a better life, and if you do bad, you get bad life next life. I don't think so. I think it's just like in class. Some classes you like, some classes you won't like. So you will experience all kinds of lives in this life. You're a nobody. in the next life, you might be a movie star, you might be somebody. In another life, you maybe have a horrible life. So each life is an opportunity to grow and to reach for moksha. That's one of the popular words. I'm sure you guys have heard of it. And so that's the journey that we are on. And moksha is earned. Heaven is given, but moksha is always earned. You cannot beg for moksha. Moksha cannot be given. It has to be earned. And so to me, it excites me. Reincarnation, as I said, the coward and the warrior, they don't look at things the same way. When the coward sees a war coming, all he can think of is blood and pain and suffering. And how do I get away from here? How do I run away from here? And that's where heaven comes in. Run away, run away. And the warrior looks at the same things and says, hey, here's an opportunity for me to do something great. And that's what life is. If you change your outlook and say, look, I have an opportunity here to do something, to make a name for myself. And that's the power of reincarnation. And let me say that the next Einstein, the next Gandhiji, the next Jesus, if you will, the next Mother Teresa, those will all be those who chose reincarnation. Not from those who chose heaven will not come back. So those who chose reincarnation, from those people will be the next Gandhiji, the next great person.
You know, you had said earlier that for a lot of Hindus or non-Hindus, there's a belief of what we call an atheist. And mm-hmm. I've seen this term used a couple different ways. I mean, the first way I've seen it used is I've seen it as a group of people who basically say, well, I don't believe there's a man in the sky, and we're going to call him God and stuff like that. I've also seen that there's a group of people who basically say, well, I'm an atheist, and for them, they believe that there is no God figure, but they do believe that there is a energy in the universe that kind of is everything, right? And then there's a third atheist category, which I know a couple of my friends are, which is interesting, and that is they basically believe that that when you die, you become dirt. There is no reincarnation. There is no heaven. And basically, when you're dead, you're dead. And I think if you were to ask the average person on the street what an atheist is, they would go with the last category, which is a group of people who believe in nothing.
Right.
And, you know, it's interesting because, you know, when I do talk to some of those people who fall into that category, and I ask them, well, you know, what does your life look like? Or if I talk to some of their partners that are with them and say, well, you know, what's it like to live with someone like that? Like, are they just basically about material wealth and not caring about anything? And, you know, who cares about following any rules? Because, you know, if anything, I just want to preserve myself so I don't die so quickly. But it's funny because there seems to be, even within that group of atheists that believe that, you know, dearth, you know, dead, you know, dying means dirt and ceasing to exist at any level.
Right.
That they seem to have a common code of just basically what we would consider to be, in some religions, the golden rule, which is do unto others as they do unto you, which is a path really looking at and taking care of people. And I said, well, it's very interesting that you could have a group of people who are atheists, who don't believe in anything, but yet believe in just basically living their lives, you know, taking care of other people and loving them just like they would love themselves. So when you were talking earlier about your path of atheist, what did that mean for you?
Well, again, I guess I was a kid, and to me, the thought of hell turned me off, and I said, well, I'm an atheist. So, and as I have grown older, I have, you know, more maturity and stuff like that. So, to me, this thing about atheism comes from, I think, king religions. So basically, you have to believe in God, and you will be rewarded. And it does not go in teacher faiths. In teacher faiths, it's not belief; it's your actions that count. And so an atheist can be a good person, you know. And lots of Hindus, they believe in caste. I do not. And in the name of caste, a lot of bad things have happened. And so I hear about Christians saying, turn the other cheek or thou shalt not kill. My country, India, was colonized, and millions of people starved to death, and the British government didn't even care. So the poverty in India is due to colonization, basically. And let's ask the Native Americans, Africans who have been enslaved, about thou shalt not kill. I mean, just because their religion says this doesn't mean that people are following it. And just because a person says, I'm religious, I believe in God, doesn't mean that person is a good person. And just because somebody says, I don't believe in God, it doesn't mean that he's a bad person. Can I ask these religious people, is rape bad? Is rape a crime? Can I ask them, is slavery wrong? How do they define that these things are wrong? We know these things are wrong. So how do they know that? Can they look at their religious books and tell me? There's nothing in their religious books that says rape is wrong. There's nothing in their religious books that says slavery is wrong. So how do you know that these things are wrong? That's basically society enforces these rules, and atheists can follow these rules. So this whole idea of atheists being bad is wrong. As I said, times have changed. Back in the day, you got a job because you know the boss. And I think religions are stuck in that idea that you must know God, you must have belief in order to God to reward you with heaven and all that stuff. And today, you get a job because of your qualifications or what you have done. And so approach to God must be the same way. You know, let your actions, let your what you have done in life make you come close to God or not. It's not belief that should be stressed, but your actions. Are you a good person? That's all. That's all it is needed. You don't need to believe in anything. You don't have to hold any beliefs. All you need to do is to be a good person. That's very, very simple. It's very simple. Mm-hmm. Like I say, I talk about being a god. Buddhists talk about this all the time. It's like the Buddha is already within you. So God is within us already. And it's very, very easy to be a god.
Mm-hmm. Now, as you know, as part of the show, we always like to find out what the paths look like as far as the spiritual growth of an individual. You know, and I had kind of hinted that earlier when I asked you to kind of go back and look at you turning away from religion at an early age. So, you know, you're about 50 years old. So tell me, what have you been doing as far as your own personal spiritual growth or belief systems or teachings? Or, you know, I assume you didn't wake up one day at 50 and say, I'm going to go ahead and write this book. So how did you get from your childhood of walking away from everything to where you are today?
Oh, again, it's been like for a long period. I'm 58 now, and for 50 mm-hmm. years, I would say I was lost. Basically, I didn't care much about religion. I just, you know, worked and watched TV, and that's it. That was it. And as I said, something happened in my 50s. Something happened, woke me up, and now I shut off the TV. I read. That's all I do. and it is appropriate as a teacher faith. You know, if you belong to a teacher faith, a teacher is asking you to read. And this is something mm-hmm. that Gandhiji used to do, it seems. He used to have prayer meetings, and he used to read from the Gita, and he used to read from the Quran, and he used to read from the Bible, and he used to read from all books. And to me, when I first heard it, like, that's silly. Why would you do that? And now I realize that that's what a teacher faith is all about. You need to learn from everything. You need to. There's some truth in all religions, and so open your mind. And that's what happened. My mind got open, and I would say that's, I don't know, again, a revelation, epiphany or something, I don't know. But something happened to me and I changed. And now all I do is read and read and read. I read all kinds of books. I try to read all religious books. So it's a definite change.
Mm. Do you know what that pivoting point was in your life where you just decided to take the turn?
I couldn't tell. I couldn't say. It just came to me. That's all.
Okay. Very good. Thank you for sharing that. Go ahead, Mike.
Yeah, I find that pretty interesting because, you know, I like how you talked about how you got to that certain point in your life and you switched from, you know, the TV and kind of being, you know, not as open to everything and turning to reading and exploring. And, you know, the one thing that I always found fascinating when it comes back to reincarnation also is that, you know, number one, I think that it's important for us to never stop learning because I really believe that the knowledge that we get in each lifetime, you know, it really stays with us in our subconscious and we have access to that, you know, lifetime after lifetime. And, you know, things that we're good at in one lifetime, we can get better at in another. And, you know, the thing that really kind of sealed the deal for me with reincarnation in a way too is the fact that, you know, throughout my life I may have known some people here or there who had an amazing talent at a young age, or I would look at, you know, famous composers or famous people who, you know, at 5 years old they're playing symphonies on the piano or, you know, anything like that where it seems like some people were just born brilliant at a young age. And it's like, you know, I would say to myself, well, there's no way humanly possible, I think, that they could gain all that knowledge so quickly or learn so quickly. And what it is they're tapping into stuff that they already were experts at before, you know. And so I just think that's really neat that for people to understand that if they're interested in, the you know, pursuing the reincarnation or learning how it works, that, you know, even like from atheist standpoint, you know, it's like, you know, it'd be tough for me personally to believe that, oh, everything I've done in this entire life and everything that I've learned and tried to do is just totally gone at the end. It's almost like exciting to know that, hey, it's coming along with me wherever I go. You know, you know, even from reincarnation, I kind of think that, you know, where somebody might call it heaven, you might reincarnate into a guardian angel for a while, and then you do that for a while, and then you say, hey, okay, now I want to come back to Earth. You know, have you ever factored those concepts into it, I guess? Because I know reincarnation is usually always about, oh, you know, we're going to come back as a human life, but, you know, with an amazing universe and planets and capacities to be other beings, what do you think of those concepts where, you know, we're – it seems like, hey, you know, maybe we're not on Earth for a while, but we're learning spiritual classes in another dimension, and then we come back physically, you know.
To me, first of all, I think reincarnation, I mean, there is only one God. To me, Hinduism teaches us that there is only one God, but she is known by many names. So Christians call her Jesus, Buddhists call him the Buddha, and stuff like that. So there is only one God, and if there is only one God, and if there's only one being that made all this huge universe, I would say reincarnation applies to all. So, we all get reborn. The only thing is that do we all want to be reborn? Because life is so harsh, and we have looked down upon life as bad, it's a sin, and stuff like that. And to me, I think God will say, you know, if you don't want to be reborn, that's your choice. You get death. Unfortunately, that's all. I don't see a heaven. As I said, doing nothing in heaven, why would God let you just sit and do nothing? It didn't make any sense. And so as far as alternate dimensions, again, I am rational. A person, like I said, I can't see that. I don't see it. I don't see any evidence for such things, unfortunately. I believe this is it. This is what you see is what you get. You either choose life or you choose death. And those are the only two choices. choices there are. And obviously nobody would choose death. So to me, even though atheists may not believe in reincarnation, I doubt they would choose death. I would say they would choose life.
Yeah, it sounds good to me.
So, you know, we always like to ask this question before the show ends, and that is, what do you think is the biggest lesson in life you've learned?
It's a big question. I don't know what the biggest lesson. Basically to look at life, to be thankful for life, not to look down upon life and say, you know, there's something else up there. I keep hearing of all those, what you call moksha. People think moksha is someplace else, again, peaceful place and all that stuff. And I am saying, I like it here. People should be thankful for human life, especially those of us who have been, who are lucky to live in first world countries, and to be thankful and say, look, there is an opportunity here. I'm 58, but I still say, hey, reach down for the hand of God. That's what I say, you know. You can still do things. I mean, you know, what's a life for if you don't reach for the hand of God, you know? So at whatever age you are, you can still aspire. And that's what human life is all about, aspiration, you know. Maybe if not in this life, maybe in the next life.
Mm-hmm. You know, I know you've talked to a number of people who have actually read your book and gave you some feedback. What do you think is the common thread that you're hearing from the everyday person who's coming across your book for the first time?
Again, it is, like I said, I think people think of it differently, and most people are under the impression that reincarnation, karma, and they have the popular views, and they are surprised because, as I said, I keep saying I try to bring a rational viewpoint to reincarnation. There is no evidence of reincarnation. Maybe we can find it because, we know that we cannot, there is simply zero evidence of heaven, and there's no way we can find it. But one of the things scientists say is that if you want to be taken seriously, you have to, you have to provide evidence. And reincarnation, you can find evidence. You can, we have so much record keeping now. We can, it seems like kids, when we are kids, we remember our past lives. So let's create a database of these kids and ask them questions and check these answers and see if any of these are correct. I mean, a little kid shouldn't be able to talk about somebody living in the 1700s or 1800s, you know. So that would be a clue that reincarnation is true. The problem, obviously, is that there are too many enemies of reincarnation in this world, unfortunately.
You see. Why don't you go ahead and close off the last question, Mike?
So I guess my question to you is, what kind of advice would you give somebody who is trying to figure out who they are, as far as trying to figure out who they are as far as what they feel they need to work on? Like, would you encourage anybody to participate in like a past life regression, or have you even experienced with anything like that?
No, actually, I would say, you know, open your mind, read. And that's the only thing I would say, read, and be open to new experiences and enjoy life and give back. Like I said, you know, when you think of heaven, you are saying, how can I be happy? When you think of, say, how can I make this world a happier place? That's reincarnation. So here, God has given you a chance with life, with human life. And if you're born lucky to be born in the first world country, you have a choice. You have a choice to make. You have the opportunity to make a difference. And you think of Mother Teresa. She could have gone to the wealthier parts of Europe. She went to India. Gandhiji, he was a lawyer. He could have had a nice practice in England. He walked away from that. Schindler, he could have said, hey, these are not my people. You know, why should I bother? The Buddha, he was supposed to be an emperor. He was slated to be an emperor. And he walked away from that. So don't be afraid to take a chance and, you know, seize the opportunity. God, to me, is not, I think people, when they think of heaven, they are going the wrong way. When we talk about all these people that I mentioned, Schindler, Gandhiji, Mother Teresa, the Buddha, we all say, well, they are with God. Well, which way did they go? They didn't go towards the easy way of life. They went the wrong way. They went the way of pain and suffering. So that's the thing that I say about Hinduism, is like my book, it's like there is pain here, suffering here. Where else would you rather be?
Yeah, thank you.
Excellent. Well, thank you for being on the show. For people who were listening earlier, if you're looking for his book, The Power and Intelligence of Karma and Reincarnation, you can find it on Amazon and other locations that distribute it electronically, and, of course, in hardcover also. So if you found the topic interesting, you know, we were kind of talking earlier that Dharma definitely kind of fills a gap in a certain location where he's able to meet up with people who are in that transition of that middle space between the dogma-based religions and, you know, this other area with all the other spiritual teachings. So it's a beautiful place and a beautiful book that you've created that's going to help so many people. So thank you for being on the Men's Spiritual Radio Show. And as always, Mike, I love having you on. So thank you. And for intro music. And with that, if you want to find out more about this show or other shows, you can go to our website at spiritualconnectionsradio.com. All right. Good night, everybody.
Good night. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thank you, Dharma.
Good night.